Welcome everybody to the October 2024 book launch with Behind Our Eyes. I'm your host, Annie Cipetta. Tonight we're going to hear from educator, poet, and children's book author Kate Chamberlain. Her book is called Hey, You Got Eyeballs in There? Four Journeys in a Challenged Life. Kate Chamberlain possesses a BS and an MA. Since 1972, Kate and her husband have lived and raised three children plus two grandchildren atop the Drumlin in Walworth, New York. With the assistance of screen reader software, this former elementary teacher developed a study buddy tutoring service, presented her Feely Cans and Sniffy Jars workshop, became the published author of three children's books, edited a literary anthology featuring 65 writers with disabilities, and is a freelance writer. As empty nesters, Kate and her husband enjoy having lunch out, country walks during the good weather, and mall cruising during the inclement weather, or walking on their side-by-side treadmills. By the way, I love that, Kate.
Great.
All right, so that's Kate, and we're going to get started, so take it away.
Thank you, Annie. Hello, beautiful people. Thank you for Zooming in tonight. I'll be talking about my new book, as Annie said. Hey, you got eyeballs in there? Four Journeys in a Challenged Life. It is available from Amazon.com, Kindle, and it has been submitted to Bookshare, but it's not in their catalog just yet. All right, here we go. I have known since I was third grade that I wanted to teach. With that in mind, in due time, I earned a bachelor's degree in elementary education, taught third grade in a public school, then earned a master's degree in early childhood education with areas in reading and Spanish, plus a permanent N through 6 certificate to teach. After teaching in first grade, getting married, and having babies, I used my education to teach my own little class of three children. I was teaching in the Teddy Bear Trail Nursery School when I went blind from a rare eye disease. It was as if the proverbial chalkboard fell on me. Our daughter was 4 years old and our sons 9 and 11. I was the first blind person I'd ever talked to, and I had more questions than answers. I quit my nursery school position in the fall to learn daily living skills. When the other two teachers visited me in the spring, they told me my students thought I had died. That broke my heart and snapped me out of my malaise. I took the long white cane and my talking wristwatch in to visit my former students. I realized that my passion was still for teaching and that it would be my saving grace. The public elementary school librarian gave me Sally Alexander's book, Mommy Can't See Me, and said, you could write a story. So I did. The title of my book, Hey, You Got Eyeballs in There, happened while I was working with two first graders at a small round table in the library. One of them snuck up to try to see between my reflective lenses and my cheek. Then he blurted out with a blast of peanut butter breath, hey, you got eyeballs in there? I assured him I did, but they don't work right. It satisfied his curiosity and gave me the title for my collection of 47 stories. Throughout the decades, I kept writing vignettes reflecting my professional education, experience teaching children, As a sighted mom, as a blind mom, and a guide dog handler. When I reviewed my creative nonfiction pieces, I realized they fell into four age-related journeys: early years, teen years, wife and mother, and grandmother. The target audiences are middle grades and adults. However, the vocabulary could be read by third graders. It is my hope that parents and grandparents will have their little ones snuggle up to them as they share the stories in my book. Each story has numerous springboards for discussion at every age level, such as for blindness, puppies and guide dogs, family camping, nature and the environment, juvenile diabetes, juvenile obesity, epileptic seizures, Colonial Williamsburg, and other historic sites, family values, bringing home a newborn from the hospital, and a host of other topics. There is a list of activities and resources at the end of the book that I have used during my Feely Cans and Stiffy Jars workshops to assist readers with interactive experiences. With this book on Amazon.com, Kindle, and soon Bookshare, the world is my classroom. Now, Grace is the blind character throughout the four journeys. My daughter recorded an excerpt from the teenage journeys, which I heard my recording just go off. So I'm going to have to start up the recording again. So do you have any questions so far while we get Victor back online here?
So, Kate, this is Annie. I have a very curious mind. So I want to know, like, with your Feely cans and your smell, smelly jars, which ones were the most popular with the kids?
Well, one of them I would put, I had like the Sniffy jar would have peppermint in it or some kind of food, but I always would have dog food in one. And most people couldn't identify it, but when they did, it was always the great fun. Well, you know, don't go to her house for lunch, you're just going to get dog food, that kind of thing. So, all right, I think we're ready.
All righty.
The zipper creep. Grace was nervous about being in large groups. It was so hard to know when someone was talking to her if they didn't say her name and their own name. At the bonfire, word spread that there was going to be a party at Heather's house afterward. Grace knew it would be noisy and there might be drugs. The other three really wanted to go, so Grace felt she couldn't say no. As they got closer to Heather's house, there were cars all over the place. Aw, man, we're gonna have to walk two blocks just to get to the frickin' party, Joe moaned. Even from that distance, they could feel the thrumming and hear the music. As they came closer, there were bursts of loud, raucous laughter. Grace tried to calm the uneasy feeling that was growing in the pit of her stomach. Walking into the house, they were immediately sucked up by the crowd. People were shoulder to shoulder, butt to belly, with only smoky air to breathe. Ken and Grace became separated from Edie and Joe, although Grace couldn't tell who was where anyway. She was glad Ken had a strong hold on her hand. She could barely hear Ken when he yelled into her ear, "There's a chair! I'll try to find us a soda and be right back, okay?" She nodded her agreement and sat down. She checked her talking watch for the time, but could not hear the tiny voice. She thought ruefully about how loud it sounded in church when she accidentally bumped the time button. Hi, Grace, a nameless voice hollered and passed on before Grace got out her own hello. As people passed by her, she detected a sweet smell. She'd heard that marijuana had a sweet smell and wondered if it was the real thing. She reached out her hand to try to figure out what was near her. To the left, she felt a wall with flocked paper on it. Her chair had a caned back and seat with curved wooden arms and straight legs. From the arm of her chair, she gently reached to the right. Her fingers felt corduroy. It was just a quick touch, but she recognized the feel of fabric over a zipper. With her face flushed and turning redder, she stammered, "Oh, excuse me." The stranger's thick, deep voice mumbled, "That's okay, honey. I'll give you a half hour to stop." Grace rushed up out of her chair and felt a cold liquid slosh on her head. "Grace, for crying out loud, where are you going in such a rush?" Ken asked, trying to keep hold of the red Solo cup of Coke she had just smashed into. "Oh gosh, what a mess. Do you see a napkin or something?" she yelled at him to be sure he heard her above the noise. "I'll go get something. I found the kitchen on my way to the drinks," he hollered back. Grace didn't know what else to do but sit back down in the chair and hope the zipper crepe had moved on. She sipped her Coke, but found that it made her queasy. She bit her lip to calm her stomach. She checked her watch again, but of course, it did not speak any louder than the first time she tried. Her cold, sweating hands stuck on the wood arms of the chair as her fingers rubbed up and down on them. "How long has Ken been gone?" she wondered. To take her mind off the rising frustration and panic, she tried to eavesdrop on the conversations that were around her. The smoke was making her feel sick. She thought she heard a boy say, "Ken's pretty lucky. He can leave this one out here and make it with Heather, too." "Yeah," came a reply. "Heather really knows what she's doing. What a piece of..." But the rest of his comment was lost as another conversation burst out into loud laughter. Grace needed to get to the bathroom quickly. She had no idea where the bathroom would be. She didn't even know where the door was to get out of the house. She stood up and took a step. She felt someone's foot pull out from under hers just as she put her full weight on it. "Oh, I'm sorry. Could you tell me where the bathroom is?" she said as she steadied herself. "Oh, sure, gorgeous. It's upstairs on the right. I'll go with you." At first, she thought he recognized that she was blind and he was being helpful. But the way he draped himself on her and sloshed his drink on her left breast made her change her mind. With a quick, "No thanks," she twisted out of his grip. The twisting motion disoriented her even more. She had no idea which direction to go to get to the door. Her panic was heightened as she bumped from person to person. Her shoulder hit something hard, and her hip slammed into something even harder, a doorknob. As she turned the knob, she prayed that it was the door out and not a closet. Grace tried to remember if they had walked up 3 steps, across a small patio, and then 2 steps up to the door? Or was it 2 steps up to the patio and 3 steps up to the door? Her breathing was shallow and irregular. With her heart thudding in her breast, she opened the door. The cool air hit her face. She felt for the step with her foot. Once she let go of the door, she'd be in limbo with no solid landmarks. Her foot found 1 step. Then she found the next step. Was there 2 or 3? Her mind was a blur. Her hands were sweaty and cold, and she thought she would surely throw up. Her foot didn't find another step. That meant the 3 steps were going to be from the patio to the sidewalk. She tried to think. Did we turn left after coming up 3 steps, or did we go straight? She turned right into a wall. She turned back and felt with her foot for whatever was there. The little voice in her head said, "Never go anywhere without crackers, or at least your long white cane." Her mother's words about new opportunities also popped into her head. Her foot went down, and she felt herself fall forward. Her knee hit the edge of the sidewalk, and her hands smacked down on the hard-packed grass. Rough hands helped her to her feet. "Whoa, too much to drink, little lady?" Her mind raced as his hands began to brush the dust off. She felt the saliva begin to swell up in her mouth. Her palms began to sweat again, and there was an awful taste in her mouth as all the contents of her nervous stomach shot up and out all over the man who was helping her. "Get your hands off her, fella!" yelled Ken, dropping the case of sodas Heather had asked him to get from her van. "Grace, are you okay? Why did you leave the party? I told you I'd be right back." "I'd like to go home. I'm not feeling well," was all Grace could say. I'll get Joe and Edie, Ken said. "Wait here on the patio bench." The walk back to the car seemed longer than 2 blocks. No one spoke. No one knew what to say. Grace was confused. She wanted to believe Ken, but everyone knows how easy it is to fool a blind person. So much depends on trust. Could she trust Ken again? Maybe it just wasn't worth the emotional investment.
Obviously, Grace's boyfriend is Ken, and they were with Eddie and Joe. In the zipper creep, I think encapsulates the emotions, challenges, and perseverance that Grace personifies. Annie, do you want to field questions or go on to the second excerpt?
So I think I just have one question I want to ask. By the way, your daughter, what a wonderful sounding voice she has.
Well, 40 years ago, she was that little four-year-old.
I know. My, they grow fast. The time goes by. So your stories all have messages of acceptance and tolerance and other themes, like you just said, about being able to trust and, you know, how much to trust, when to trust, that kind of thing. But are there any themes that you haven't explored yet in your writing that you would like to?
You know, I knew this question was coming. And I the only thing I can think of is that I now have 5 great grandchildren. Maybe I'll start writing about them.
That sounds wonderful. Yeah. I think that's a great answer.
Okay. We'd like another excerpt?
Sure.
It's shorter.
S'mores excerpt.
Grandma Grace's s'mores. Grandma Grace, Grandma Grace, tell us a story. Grandma Grace's 3 grandchildren begged as they sat next to her old guide dog at her feet on the porch. "Well, when I was your age," Grandma Grace began, "our family went to camp each summer." "Were you blind then?" asked Liam, who got the thick, curly brown hair from his granddad, Ken. "Yes," Grandma Grace answered, "but I've never let that get in my way. One evening, I wanted to make my own s'more, just like the other kids did," I continued. "My mother said I couldn't do it." "Yes, I can," I said, and moved to where the campfire smoke didn't blow into my face. I could hear Mom and the other adults nearby, but they didn't stop me. I felt the lines on the graham cracker and pushed. The graham cracker cracked, crumbled. After several crumbled crackers, I broke one along the lines and set it on the log we used for a bench. The chocolate candy bar was easy to unwrap. It was hard to break the candy, but I got it right on the first try. "Yay, Grandma Grace," Paulette cheered, bouncing her blonde pigtails up and down. Grandma Grace continued. "I set one of the chocolate pieces on the graham cracker that was on the log. Carefully, I put one of the marshmallows on a prong of my long-handled fork. The marshmallow fell off before I got it over the fire." "Ah, Grandma," blonde, blue-eyed Gracie sighed. "I jammed the second marshmallow onto the prong and held it over the fire. After a long time, I felt the marshmallow. It was still cold. I put it back over the fire, lower this time. Poof, it went up in flames and smelled charred. I pulled out the fork. The marshmallow fell into the fire." "Oh, no," Liam moaned. "I needed something to hold my fork up at the right height, so I found a notched stick and poked it into the ground near the fire. The marshmallow toasted up quite nicely. I carried it back to the log. I turned around and sat on my graham cracker and chocolate. It crumbled and fell into the dirt. Grandma, they all yelled. Well, I ate the marshmallow plain. I needed something to hold my graham cracker and chocolate, so I searched for the old iron skillet we had. I put a new graham cracker and chocolate into it for safekeeping. I placed the skillet next to the notched stick as I roasted another marshmallow. My marshmallow was, of course, perfect this time. I put it on top of the chocolate, holding the marshmallow down with the top piece of the graham cracker. I slowly pulled out my fork. The center of the marshmallow stayed on the fork. When it was cool, I pinched it off and ate the sticky part. Yum, Paulette said. There's nothing better than a gooey, sticky s'more with melted chocolate dripping all around. I ate the whole mess and several more, too. Grandma Grace, Gracie asked, would you make s'mores for us? Sure, said Grandma Grace, waking up her old guide dog. But these days, I use a microwave.
And that's... And so I thank you for listening, but as a teacher, I do have an assignment that we will work on together right now. And I, just as I trust my life to a guide dog, I'd like you to now trust your right hand to me. So if you'd raise your right hand as if you were a traffic policeman and stopping the traffic. All right, you have your hand up?
Yep.
Okay. Flop your thumb to the side and your ring finger to your palm. And this is contracted American Sign Language for I love you. So thank you for listening. I love you too. Oh. Now, Annie, if there are other questions or time or what do we do from here?
So from here, we I guess we're going to open it up to our participants. If you have a question, please raise your hand, and we'll get started. So to raise your hand, it'll probably be under the more controls if you can see them. And if you're visually impaired, if you're blind and using the screen reader technology, it's Alt Y to raise your hand and Alt A to mute and unmute. So let's get started.
Deanna has a hand up.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'll enjoy your book. I think that you have handled things with humor and honesty at the same time, and that's a good technique. We've traveled the similar journey in yes. that. I was a blind child. I've lost my vision at 8.5 and went all the way through high school and public school. And yeah, there are lots of embarrassing times when your blindness leads you to do something ridiculous. So I remember once tripping over the edge of a flower bed and going down into the flower bed on my knees, tearing my pantyhose, and a boy that I sort of liked in my English class said, "What are you doing down there?" And I said, "It was such a dreary day. I thought I'd drop in and give them a little sunshine and, you know, scramble back to my feet because you don't really want to cry or look like you don't know what you're doing, even when you don't. And so you just do the best you can and try to have a sense of humor about it because life is going to do things to you and everybody. And, you know, when I put Bengay on my toothbrush, I had to throw the toothbrush away. But I then came up with ways of marking tubes. So, you know, you just...
I'd be very interested in when you read this, the early years story, because I became blind when I was 40.
Yeah. And
I based my stories on my experience teaching, and then I said, well, as a blind mom and a sighted mom, but I'd be interested in your thoughts on if the stories I wrote in the early years ring true with you too.
Sure, it'll be fun. I haven't had a chance to download it and read it yet, but and today I have my fifth great granddaughter born this morning.
Wonderful.
Oh,
congratulations.
Wow. Congratulations.
So I got up at four in the morning so I could be at the hospital at 5:30 because my little granddaughter is very petite and very narrow. So we knew it was going to have to be a cesarean. Mm-hmm. She's 23, but she wears the size zero jeans before she got pregnant.
Wow.
And the resident that was assisting at the cesarean looked at her and said, "Wow, that was all baby," because she was pretty flat once the baby was out.
Now, obviously, you were blind when your babies were born. Did you have any trouble with the hospital letting you take your babies home?
No, I was actually a Peace Corps volunteer at the time, and I had to fly from what was then called Western Samoa. Now they just call themselves Samoa, and give birth in the LBJ Tropical Medical Center in Pango Pango on the American Samoa side of the group of islands. And they didn't realize that I had been in country for over 2 years. And so they didn't realize my language skills were because I worked with blind children, you know, I had to have good language skills. And so they would stand around my bed and talk about me as if I didn't understand Samoan. And so I got to hear some unflattering things like, "Oh, do you think she's married? Who is the man that comes to see her?" "No, I don't think so. She's too young." And another woman comes with him. My best friend flew over to be there at the birth. And so she and my husband would come in together. And she's actually 10 years older than we are. But and then another one said something about, you know, they would just talk about me as if I didn't know anything. And then I would hear my child's voice as she was brought down the hall. And I knew which one was mine by the sound of her voice, even before I held her. So I'd be sitting up on the side of my bed waiting, and they'd have to shake the Samoan women awake to get their babies to nurse. And so I had confidence because I was the oldest of five kids, and I'd been handling babies and young children from the time that I was fairly small myself. As soon as I was big enough and strong enough, I was changing diapers and burping babies and helping my mother and her sisters and the rest of the family with little babies. So it wasn't that tough, but it's the other people that made it tough.
Right. Other people's mm-hmm. attitudes are barriers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We have two more hands, okay. Lisa and then Alice. Go ahead, Lisa.
So I want to know how much truth is in the stories, especially about the s'mores.
Well, you have to remember, I didn't go. I was sighted.
Right.
I was 40, and so I am not going to tell you how much is autobiography in the stories, but there's a lot of me in all of these stories. And I used a lot of family names, although that person who is named may or may not recognize themselves in the story. I just kind of mix and match. But a lot of it has happened. And if it happened to me as a middle-aged woman, I was able with my education and experience with children to put it in a reality of whatever age group I was talking about or writing about. So there's a lot of autobiography in that, in the book, each of the stories, actually.
A lot of fun. Thank you.
Okay, Alice, go ahead.
Now I'm muted.
Well, thank you, Kate. I enjoyed your introductory presentation, and I am enjoying reading your book. I've read the first stage and the teenage stage, and I'm enjoying the Guide Dog Chronicles portion of your book.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah.
So it's nice to be able to listen to it via the Echo device, and I thank you for that. I also, just a quick question before my real question here. Who read the second segment that we listened to?
That was my husband.
I wondered about that.
Yeah, he didn't want to read it live, but he agreed to read a recording.
Well, that was nice. That was very nice also. As Annie already said, your daughter did such a nice job with the first reading. So I just wanted to ask that. And also, I just loved some of those parts in the early section, the first stage of the book. And I think that you did a very nice job. The description is just really engaging. And I especially like the little story about Marinela. And I like the one also where I think you are the grandmother in the wicker rocking chair. And
yes,
loved all the guide dogs that you put in these stories. And I think that your book is probably the first one that I've read wherein the family of the blind child is puppy raising a future guide dog. And I think that's a lovely touch. I think that's just such a wonderful way to introduce a child to that importance of puppy raising and guide dog work eventually and all of that, and great appreciation for those families who do the puppy raising. So thank you for including that. And I guess one of my regular questions is, can you describe the book cover for us?
Oh, I'd love to. That is my husband took the photograph, and I am sitting at a table out in our cottage, our porch, and sitting with me at the table is our youngest grandson. He was 7 when we took the picture. But his reflection is reflected in my reflective lenses. So it's a picture of my face, but he's in one of the lenses. And when we printed it out to design the cover, it was 8.5 by 11. It was nice and big. You could really tell it was Connor. And, you know, we kept telling, you're a cover star and that kind of thing. But when the cover actually came out as a 9 by 6, the poor kid just looks like a little bug on my eyeglasses. But we know it's Connor. And it just is a nice family book. So.
Good luck with the book, and congratulations on the book also, Kate. It's
thank you.
Wonderful.
I guess I consider it my magnum opus. I don't know. We'll see how it turns out.
Good thank luck.
No hands at this time.
Well, I have another question. It's Annie. So, Kate, did you always want to write children's books? Was it... when did you, were you always wanting to be a writer? How did you fall into the writing thing?
I always wanted to be a teacher. And I have been blessed to know my grandparents and a few of the great grandparents. And I realized that we forget things. And there were things that I wanted to remember and not forget. So I would be writing down little vignettes or little short stories forever. And eventually, as the librarian had said, you could write a story too. I kind of pulled those all together, and I didn't intend to be a writer. As I said, I really, my first option, my choice was to be a public school teacher. But when I became blind, I was unable to get a job. And so I say by default, I became a freelance writer. And I found I really liked it. For about 15 years, I wrote a weekly column for the county newspaper. And I did publicity bits for the organizations that I'm in. And so I guess I did fall into writing, but it kind of goes hand in hand with teaching also.
Sure. Yeah. So do you consider yourself like a historian as well? You said you like to keep track of things and record things. Do you like reading historical stuff?
I'm an eclectic reader. I guess I'm our family's chronicler. Actually, if Nancy's still on the phone, she is, we met in high school and we've still kept in touch. And I'm not going to tell you how long ago we were in high school.
Okay.
That was a good while.
Right.
And so I will read pretty much, what I'm into now are these psychological thrillers. Oh my gosh, some of them keep me up at night.
Yeah.
But I like to try to figure them out, even though there are red herrings that they throw in. And I like to try to parse the story to find out, did that first line hook me? Or did I listen for about 10 or 15 minutes before I decided, okay,
right,
I'm going to finish the story? And sometimes, Dave will turn the lights out and I'm still listening to a story. But I don't have really a genre that I like to. I have also started reading, it'd be the YA novels, because those are kind of the stories that I'm tending to be writing. I'm not a psychological thriller writer. But I don't know, I just enjoy jotting down what's around me. I like to, last week we were walking home from our grandson Connor's soccer game. And there was a young girl, probably, I'd say maybe 10 or 12, was telling her mother what she'd like to do. And the mother says, I don't care what you do. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to run with that when I have time at the computer. Because, well, you could go all over the place, humorously, sad. It might be an abused family
situation. Right.
It just, I listen a lot.
I also have another question. In the book, you had mentioned that I think it was Grace had her first guide dog at 16. Did you have that same experience?
No, I was a lot older than 16.
Yeah.
How old was I? I think I was 45 when I got my first guide dog. And just 2 months ago, I received my seventh guide dog. So I have a new guide dog now. And she's a wonderful worker. I'm just very pleased. When the trainer said there's a dog available, and I wanted a female lab. I didn't care what color, but, a female lab. And the training center just are not into the labs anymore as purebred labs. And he said that this dog is six. She has been with a previous handler who can no longer take care of her. And he said that she, being six, you kind of go, oh, times seven. She's about 42, a little middle-aged.
Right.
And he said, she is pokey. She walks slowly. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm in my 80th year. Somebody that walks pokey is going to be just perfect for me. And she is. She's a beautiful worker. I'm just delighted with her.
So, oh, that's wonderful.
So, yeah, I did not get my first dog at 16. And I believe, really, it was hard because I went blind at 40. So I had 5 years. I really wanted a guide cat, but they were not available. And I had just really gotten used to trusting my life to my husband. And then I got a very active 18-month-old golden retriever as my first guide dog. Oh, my goodness. What a challenge of trust. But she was a beautiful dog, but she walked so fast. But it was okay. It was okay for me at that age.
Right. And
this middle-aged dog is just perfect for me at my age now. So all those guide dogs. As Alice mentioned, the Guide Dog Chronicles, I had to add the guide dogs in there. The Chronicles are from the guide dog's point of view, which is probably a little bit different than what our point of view would be. So,
yeah.
One of the disappointments I had with the book is the original manuscript. There's a portion where Ken is playing his guitar in church. And I originally had found a YouTube link where that music you could hear being played. But when the manuscript preparer tried to get that link, it wasn't there. We couldn't find it. So we had to leave out any links that where people could listen to the music or other things. So that was kind of a disappointment, but I don't think it detracts from the book at all. There's enough action and description and I don't know. I hope love in the book that people will enjoy it.
Oh, there's plenty of that. I couldn't put your book down. I finished it, I think, in almost one sitting. I just kept going back to it. Like I would listen and I got to take a break and do some things around the house. And then I go right back to it. Oh, I got to cook dinner. Let me go back to it. So I appreciated the honesty and the spirit of the book was wonderful. And I really hope that you consider writing more. Whatever way it is, the way you put yourself into your word is just wonderful. And I really appreciate.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Alice has her hand up.
All right. Thank you, Annie. Just thought, Kate, that the ebook, the Kindle ebook starts right off with the story. And I'm wondering to whom you dedicated the book or what material you may have had at the onset of the book. That's now I don't know, it may be at the tail end. Some of the ebooks, some of that introductory material ends up being at the end. I have no idea why, but if you can answer that, sure, that would be fine. Thank you.
The manuscript preparer mentioned that the back cover blurb is never included in the Kindle. So I asked her to put it as the last page of the book. So that the dedication and the table of contents are not in the Kindle. One of the reasons for that, she said, is that as people download Kindle, it's particular to their device. And so the page numbers are not included in Kindle either. And so I guess that's why the table of contents is not included either. But my book is dedicated to Edie Pasquini. And she is an angel incarnate. For over 30 years, she would come once a week and help me do whatever needed to be done. If we needed to cry together, we did that. If we laughed together, she was raising three sons at the time. I was raising two daughters and two sons and a daughter. And very often we'd help each other do school projects that the kids needed to work on. But just one of those, I don't know, people you just get along with. We were comfortable with each other and just a wonderful, wonderful friend. And, you know, a BFF, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really super.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Kate. That's lovely.
Yeah.
This is Annie. I do know that the Kindle for computer, for PC, does have all of that information in it.
Oh,
so
good.
I could tap, but if you go to your mobile device, it doesn't necessarily have that. So.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know why they do that, but whatever.
And what you had mentioned, Annie, as the manuscript preparer was talking, told me she was reading. And then she said, oh, wait, I have to go back. I'm supposed to edit this thing.
Yeah.
So I guess that was, she was enjoying the stories too.
And your manuscript preparer is?
Nicole Caldwell of Caldwell Creations.
Okay.
And she prepared it for the Amazon.com and for the Kindle. There's two
right
preparations. And then after Winslow Parker had sent us the directions for
Bookshare.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. I contacted Nicole and I said, Do you think you could do this for me? And I'll tell you, within a couple hours, she had it submitted and we have a case number and they will contact her when it is on their catalog.
Excellent. Excellent. Any other plans for promotions or anything else you want to share with us before we get Lisa on to talk about Behind Her Eyes?
No, I'm taking a break. I'm enjoying my grandchildren and I want to be able to, you know, just go with them to their games. And I'm still keeping notes though and keeping musings. And when my muse attacks me, I'll start to write again. But I do thank everybody for Zooming in this evening. It's been great.
Oh, and Kate, your website, can you share that?
Yes, it's basically Kate Chamberlain, .com. It's www.katechamberlain.com. All my books are on Amazon.com.
All righty. Thank you so much, Kate, for sharing
your book and facilitating this
conversation. Yeah. So, Lisa.
I'm right here, and I want to thank Kate, too. It sounds like a wonderful book, and I can't wait to read it. I hope it gets on Bookshare soon. But I also wanted to say a little bit about Behind Our Eyes. We're a place where disabled writers come to share work with each other. And we hear stimulating Sunday night speakers twice a month. We have an opportunity to publish in our online magazine called Magnets and Ladders. We have the opportunity to take free classes to improve our craft. We can participate in readers' workshops if we want to, and critique groups. And there's even more that I know I haven't mentioned. We have published 3 anthologies and have a website with recordings of our conference since 2010. And when you join, a mentor or pilot can guide you through ways to get more involved in the group. There's no fee to join, and for me, this is one of the most supportive bunch of people I've ever come across. So, though the activity of actual writing is done alone, we are all here to help each other. And thank you all so much.
Thank you, Lisa. And for anybody that doesn't know, Lisa is our newly elected president of Behind Our Eyes. And you can contact Behind Our Eyes at www.behindoureyes.org. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Annie.
Have a good night.